everyone. Welcome to the Celtics Talk Podcast. I'm Kyle Draper, joined by A. Sherrod Blakely and Chris Forsberg. What's up, fellas?
What's going on, Chris Forsberg
was in D.C. for that epic win.
You know what? Like, I was really worried after that first quarter, like, how that game was going to be. Like, I don't know if it was going to be worth the money to go down there, but it sure paid off at the end.
Those games are always – there's always something about those games in D.C., whether it's a blowout, which we saw when they wore black to the game, or it's an epic overtime game. Remember, what was it, two overtimes a few years ago? So this week's episode of the Celtics Talk Podcast is brought to you by Cumberland Farms. Two for $4 breakfast sandwiches are happening now at Cumberland Farms. Stop in today and enjoy your favorites. Offer valid on any two $2.39 breakfast sandwiches plus tax. All right, Sherrod, what you clapping about?
That you made it through the read. And you did it's stutter.
I am a professional at this, young fella. Unfortunately,
there was no Cumberland Farms in D.C.
No Cumberland Farms in D.C.?
We got to expand the reach.
Yeah, they got to expand, no doubt. So much to get into this show. We're going to talk to Sekou Smith of NBA.com, NBA TV. He's a national guy. I want to hear the national perspective of this Celtics seven-game winning streak. But let's jump in right there, guys. Is this streak, you know, a turnaround point for the Celtics? Is this the real Celtics? Or because the schedule is soft, you know, they're looking better than maybe what they really are?
So we'll know December 21st. Because that's the night they play the Bucks. It's the first real challenge. And I know you guys are already going to jump on me about how bullish I am on the Bucks.
Yeah, they're struggling a little bit.
They're struggling a little bit.
I wasn't going to bring it up.
You weren't going to bring it up. But
right now.
And that's fair. But I just think you look at the schedule. There is no reason that they shouldn't be 10-0 going into the 10-game win streak going into that game against Milwaukee. And that'll be the first, to me, the real test. And they've looked really good during this stretch. The offense has been almost unbelievably good. The fact that they have a offensive rating that's something like 10 points higher than the Golden State Warriors over the seven-game streak is just improbable. But it sort of tells me that it's, you know, which extreme is right. The start of the year, they were the worst offense by far. This stretch, they've been really good. I need to see it against some really good competition to believe it. But, man, they're playing with some good habits, and they're moving in the right direction. If they can, you got to take advantage of these sort of stretches, but I'm curious to see if they can carry it over against top line competition.
Yeah, I'm not buying that they've turned the corner, but I will say that they have pivoted in the right direction, because the point that Chris made earlier about them, really, frankly, they haven't played any real legit competition. I mean, during this win streak, they're winning by an average margin of 23 points per game, which is insane. And even if you just decided, you know what, let me just take out that 56-point smackdown at Chicago, they're still winning by 17-plus points a game, with that not included. So the Celtics are doing exactly what you're supposed to do, which is to show the ability to put the smackdown on bad teams. But there's only so much bullying you can do until you got to deal with a real bully. Milwaukee is that type of team. They've got that type of talent. They have. They're going to be a little bit different now with some of the moves they've made since then. I think they're a better team than they were first time the Celtics played them, and so that is going to be a legit challenge for the Celtics. And like most people, I'm looking forward to that game. I think that is going to be one of those, you know, show and prove games. I mean, you've shown that you are better, but can you prove that you're one of the elite
Sherrod,
teams?
I'm not going to overhype that game, man.
I'm going to overhype it because it's going to be the best.
But the Celtics are going to win that game by 10. Here's why. First of all, it's at the Garden. If this was on the road in Milwaukee, then to me that would be a show me game. They've been able to handle the Bucks at the Garden the last couple of years. They haven't had problems beating Milwaukee in Boston. And so I don't think Milwaukee's ready to come into Boston and win just yet. So
well, you go ahead and put your feet up on the coffee table and just ease back into this one. I'm not trying to go there. I think this is a big game because Milwaukee, you know, at some point, if you've been getting your head bashed in over and over and over again by the same team, and they're starting to show signs that maybe they can do it again, you're going to come in with even more incentive to find a way to win. I'm not saying Milwaukee's going to win, but I do believe it's not going to be a 10-point win. Boston is not going to win that game by 10.
They may win, but it's
not going to be double digits.
I feel like the Celtics, their competition, no offense, Chris Forsberg, Milwaukee Bucks are not the Celtics' competition. No, no. The Celtics have bigger fish to fry. And so beating Milwaukee at home, you've done that already.
I don't know if that.
Go to Toronto, win in Toronto.
Sure.
That's what I want to see.
When we're trying to gauge where they're at right now, it's so hard because you look at the competition and you say, you know, you should steamroll Chicago. You should beat a Wizards team that has struggled, even though you have injuries. Like, what they're doing is impressive. I just don't have a good barometer on whether it to go all in on this team because of this stretch. And I just feel like that Milwaukee game and the Philly game that looms right after are maybe just a little bit better of an indication of where they're at. Ultimately, the Celtics' ability to win those games might come down to how many warm bodies they have available as the injury bug sort of nibbles on them. But if you're a team where the hallmark is going to be depth, then there's no reason you shouldn't be winning these games right now. And so I applaud them for keeping this going, despite sort of having someone out every single night. But I just need to see it against that next cut of competition to be like, okay, they figured something out here. They found something in that early season adversity and are ready to build off of it.
Yeah, but you just brought it up. They've had guys out of the lineup. When everybody's fully healthy, are we going to see some of the issues we saw earlier this season? I mean, is it, you know, a luxury that, all right, you know, you hate guys to be out, but it's sort of opening up more minutes and more opportunities for other guys.
You know, it's fair to worry about. You know, it's no coincidence that this win streak has had somebody out every single night. And good for players to step up, but where do those minutes come from when everybody's healthy? Is Jaylen Brown going to get enough time when both him and Gordon Hayward are out there together, coming off the bench? And, you know, listen, Brad's still got some tough decisions to make. I think the good thing is all those issues go away when you're winning. And so everyone is just able to buy in right now, and they trust that Brad can throw out Robert Williams. When Tice is in foul trouble and the bigs are decimated, they can find a way to just throw guys in there, and they're going to thrive. That probably makes it a little bit easier for guys to digest, but it will be fascinating to see whether they can embrace and be as productive as we've seen guys be, because, you know, opportunity right now has afforded guys the ability to play to their strengths.
Yeah, and not only do the injuries allow guys to get opportunities they normally would not get, but it also gives Brad Stevens an opportunity to look at some combinations that he may not have thought about before, because he literally has no choice but to play guys who he normally wouldn't play. And I think that to me is the big takeaway for them going forward, that when you've got everyone together, you've seen the different combinations of players. You know which ones are really, really good. You know which ones are not so much. So to me, he'll actually be able to do a better job of figuring out which players to play and which ones to maybe cut back their minutes based upon the opponent and based upon the combinations that he has a sampling of, knowing whether they're effective or not.
Drapes, who deserves the most success, credit for the success of this streak?
You know who I'm going to say, Drapes, so don't take
the
my guy.
Credit for the most credit for the success of this streak.
You better not say it.
I'm going to say Marcus Smart.
Damn it, Drapes.
I'm
going to
say Marcus Smart.
You knew it.
No,
you
what
knew
do you mean?
That's
Sherrod. Just because you get one thing right once a year doesn't mean I can't, you know, actually agree with you. I agree with you once a year. Marcus Smart, he's been inserted into the starting lineup since that's happened. They've won every game. That's a layup right there, big fella.
But you don't go – but see, the problem with you, Drapes, is you don't give any context by which you made that pick. It's not like Marcus Smart just shows up at the scores table
well,
and then they win because he showed up at
scores. You want me to break it down for you?
That might cost you a few brain cells more than you're willing to give up, so I'll help you with that.
All right.
Marcus Smart's ability to be a playmaker, be a high-level defender, continue to make the intangible plays are
cliches,
all the components.
Right? Let's move on. People are falling asleep on this podcast, man. Cliches, bro.
Okay, point guard.
We know that's what Marcus Smart does. He plays a playmaker. Defensively, he allows Kyrie to play off the ball.
They're falling asleep because they just heard me say that about 8 seconds ago. But anyway, go ahead, point guard.
Can I say my favorite part? He was awesome in D.C. Like, Marcus Smart was on another level, and the only reason they really got back and got some energy into that game, and Kyrie was spectacular at the end, but Marcus Smart changed everything. I love that in the post game, Kyrie was like, I was watching Marcus Smart highlights the other day of his college days, and then said, yeah, in my spare time, I watch Marcus Smart highlights. Like, that's Kyrie in a nutshell, that he would be the one dude to go watch Marcus Smart Oklahoma State highlights.
Right.
I just love it. And he's just like everybody else. It's so much fun to watch those supercuts of Marcus diving all over the floor. He does. We're in unison here. He deserves all the credit.
Quickly, guys, how concerned are you about Al Horford?
Minor. You know, I think they're in a situation here where I don't know 2 weeks ago if they could do this. Because you're 10-10, you're worried about winning. Can you necessarily throttle down and give Al Horford time off. You win six in a row, I think that decision becomes a little bit easier. I think they're also learning from last year. You know, you don't want to get to a situation where you look up in March and, much like Kyrie, all of a sudden that knee's so bad, he's got to take more extreme measures. So if you can find some time here, you know, what I'm impressed with is right now they don't have Gershon to add depth. You know, you're still a little bit raw with Robert Williams and Daniel Tice, as good as he's been. But for them to have the confidence, especially, and again, Bane's coming off the ankle injury. So for them to be okay with shutting down Al for a bit, even while they don't have quite as much depth as usual, it speaks to the fact that they want to get him right and that they're confident in the rest of the team to step up. But certainly it's going to be something to watch. Like, I think we all said it early in the year. He looks a little slow at times. You had all the blocks, but maybe just didn't have the same speed and explosion, ability to stay with guys. I think that's an important part of getting him right and if they're going to be successful.
I'm concerned because Al, it means so much to what this team is about. His ability, not just being a glue guy, which we like to talk about all the time, but the fact that he provides the kind of leadership that you need, a guy who can not only talk that talk when he needs to, but also can walk it consistently. And you're going to need him. You're not, and I'm not talking about for, you know, 20, 25. No, you're going to need him to play big minutes as you get deeper into the season and get into the playoffs because his – frankly, you have no one on your team who can give you all that he does. Bane's elite defender, no question about it. He can't stretch the floor like Al can. And while Robert Williams is a freak athletically, blocking everything you throw up in the air, he doesn't have the basketball IQ that Al Horford brings to the table. And so I'm worried that he's not going to be at his peak when they're going to need him most. I am very concerned about that.
No, I agree. Let's get a guy on the line who will weigh in on this very topic, Sekou Smith.
And he knows Al very well, having covered him for the AJC down in Atlanta.
Exactly. Let's get Sekou on the Celtics Talk podcast. He's with NBA.com and NBA TV. All right, Sekou, welcome to the Celtics Talk podcast. Thanks for taking the time, my friend.
Oh, yeah, man. Appreciate it. Always always glad to talk Celtics with you, Cass.
Well, I mean, about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, we were ready to hit the panic button up
Speak
here.
Speak for yourself,
no,
Kyle.
No, you were nervous.
Speak for yourself, Kyle.
Sekou, you know Sherrod. He's always nervous. He's jittery, right? So, but now the Celtics have won seven in a row, man. What's going on with this team? Why have they been able to turn it around?
You know, I really don't know. I was watching them, you know, against Washington, and I'm saying to myself, this is two teams that when they're at their best, they should be as good as anybody in the Eastern Conference. And we know that's not the real case with Washington, but with the Celtics, I just don't understand why they can't get the pieces to connect. Kyrie is the closer that you need. You got the depth. You got the talent. You know, the balance on the roster is there. They just haven't been able to get the chemistry together. But when they play well, you see that they can compete and beat anybody in the league. I'm just wondering how long it's going to take for them to settle in, to really get settled into a groove. And not it's not about just how many games you win in a row, what kind of streaks you're going. But when I watch them and they look like the team we all projected them to be this season, I'm waiting to see that group consistently on a nightly basis.
Yeah, the one thing about them is, well, a couple things. First of all, the seven-game winning streak, almost every game it seems like they have been without one of their core guys. It's almost as if, like, addition by subtraction in terms of what they're capable of doing. There is this theory out there that maybe they've got too many talented pieces, and maybe if they got rid of one or traded one, maybe that'll finally get this team to where they're playing great basketball. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Tom Penn said that on the set last night at NBA TV, Sherrod, and I don't know. Maybe I'm just greedy. I've never understood this idea. I don't understand this thing. Well, you know, you got too much talent. Well, maybe I need to figure it out. Like, I don't know if I got too much talent, but let me sort out who does what.
Right.
So as opposed to, you know, some kind of improvement by subtraction, my thing is, don't you have to sit down and talk to these players about whose role is what and how to fulfill that? Like, one of these young guys has to be your difference maker on the defensive end. Like, that needs to be their focus. I'm thinking, have we not sat down Jaylen Brown and said, look, you can go out here and do what you've been doing and be a good player. You can go out here and turn into a defensive nightmare for people and become one of the elite defensive specialists in this league, in addition to being a guy who can get 20 points, 25 points on any given night. They're not a team to me that's devoid of the kind of basketball IQ that it would take to do that either. They got a lot of young, talented, bright players who, if you convince them that it's for the greater good, that you play a different way or that you approach things in a different way on this team specifically right now, you can work out some of those issues. That's just what it looks like to me from afar. Now, I'm not there on a daily basis to know what kind of dynamics they have in that locker room or amongst those players. But somebody somewhere has got to convince at least two of those guys to do what's best for the greater good. And that, if that means not getting the touches you normally would want on offense or not being a focus in a certain part of the game, so be it.
Well, how much tougher is that sell job that we're talking about when you got young fellas who are on the come up? Paul Pierce and I had a conversation about this about a week or so ago, and the point that he made was that when you're a young guy, yes, you want to win just like everyone else does, but you also want to establish who you are in this league. How much tougher is it, do you think, to convince young guys like a Jaylen Brown, like a Jason Tatum, to maybe sacrifice a little bit of their game for the betterment of the team?
Oh, it's totally unrealistic. Believe me, I'm talking pie in the sky. No, really, because think about other teams when they had like-age talent coming up at the same time. It's been very difficult to nourish and continue to grow and develop
right.
multiple guys, you know, that are in that same age range and same stage of their careers on that come-up, like you said. So I think it'll thunder. You know, when they had James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and Kevin Durant. There's no way in it the three of those guys could have reached their potential playing together. I truly believe that. There was no way you're going to convince James Harden to continue to be the third wheel in that trio. It's just too much ambition, too much energy, and that young gusto you have to be great. And that's a good problem to have. Don't get me wrong. I think it's a great problem for the Boston Celtics that they have all this young talent that wants to be great. But unfortunately for them, and as we know, the reality in this league is you don't develop 5 and 6 guys into star players at the same stage of their careers. That's not going to happen. So somebody goes by the wayside, somebody goes, somebody's role has to be diminished. Look at what Chris Bosh did when he went to Miami and played with LeBron and D-Wade. He had been a franchise guy in Toronto and had to go down there and become a third wheel. I mean, so if you can't convince somebody to sacrifice like that, then, yeah, somebody's going to have to get moved so you can continue to put together the kind of team you want if you're the Boston Celtics.
Give me the outsider's view. We saw last night Celtics now won 7 in a row, but Toronto goes out to Golden State, wins that game. Where do you think the Celtics rank in the Eastern Conference hierarchy right now?
That's a great question. I just got done having that same conversation on my own podcast. The hierarchy as of this moment to me in the Eastern Conference is such. Toronto has shown themselves to be the best, deepest team in the East right now, as of right now. We're not even to Christmas, so keep that in mind. Boston is number 2. Despite all the issues they've dealt with, they, to me, look like the second best team in the Eastern Conference, followed by Philly and then Milwaukee, who's had some really high points early on this season. But I'm not yet convinced that when we get to the end of this regular season, Milwaukee's going to be prepared to compete at the same level those other three teams are. I think Jimmy Butler is huge for Philly. I think the Celtics have the quality depth that very few teams in the league can rival. And I think the Raptors have that similar quality depth, maybe not as heralded as Boston's, but certainly in a much better place right now from a chemistry perspective. And that's why I would put them at number 1 in the East.
Yeah, no doubt, SaQ. I got to give mad respect to the Raptors. And without Kawhi Leonard last night to go into Oracle and beat the Warriors the way they did. With that being said, I feel like this league is star-driven. And, you know, Kawhi Leonard, he's a star. Kyle Lowry is a star. But I'm not betting my money against Kyrie after what he did last night. We've seen him on the biggest and brightest of stages. How do you view Kyrie as the leader of the Celtics?
I agree with you, Kyle. I just think, Kyrie is infinite. The talent is infinite. I mean, we've all seen that. What he can do on the court, how he can get to his spots. what I've been very curious about is the way his teammates talk about him and what kind of leader they talk about him being, which I don't know that anybody that saw Kyrie and was around that Cleveland team when he was there viewed him in that light. You know, so I think that's been the most impressive thing about his transition from where he was in Cleveland to what he's doing now in Boston. The talent is not – that's never been in question. We were having this argument the other day about who's been the best number two guy on a championship team in recent memory. And the fact that Kyrie's name comes up as quickly as it does with LeBron in Boston a few years ago should tell you something. I mean, it's him, Steph or Durant, whichever one you want to call number two at Golden State the past few years, and D-Wade. In recent memory, you know, not going back as far as Kobe and Shaq's teams, but certainly since then. I think Kyrie's talent level is not in question, but there are still some people out there who feel like Kyrie has to be more of a leader and maybe direct more traffic and maybe do more of what I was talking about earlier in terms of helping those young guys figure out what role specifically they need to play on this team for it to reach its full potential. And to me, I think that's unfair to put that on Kyrie's shoulders when you have an Al Horford and a Gordon Hayward around as well, who are veteran guys who should be a part of that process. So, but yeah, as long as Kyrie is finishing the way he has in his career, yeah, Boston is, to me, has as good a chance as anybody in the East of coming out and representing the Eastern Conference in the finals.
When you talk about the Celtics and their chances of coming out of the East, certainly one guy that has to be a factor is a guy that I know you're familiar with, Al Horford. He's been recently diagnosed with patellofemoral pain syndrome.
Give it up, Shirai. Give it up, big fella.
Oh, that's how you pronounce it. And I did not – this is a stutter in my pronunciation.
You just spent the last 10 minutes practicing it, bro, so I give you credit.
Well, you might need 11.
He got WebMD up on his –
anyway, I know he got WebMD over
anyway,
there.
Anyway, as I was saying, Al, you know, in his condition and knowing him the way you do, how concerned are you about – him knowing that this is, I mean, this is a form of, you know, patella, depending on which way you want to describe it, tendonitis going forward. Because, again, Al, as you know, he's a big part, a big deal of what they've been about, and certainly seeing him in Atlanta, you know that firsthand. But should the Celtics be concerned about this?
I mean, I guess you should be because of the advanced stage he is in his career. And when you hear about injuries like that, you always have some concern, but that was a consummate pro, man. He's going, you know, nobody takes care of himself and their body and is as meticulous about the craft as he is. So I know that, you know, his attitude about it will be exactly what you need. He'll approach it like the true vet that he is, understanding what he means to that team. That's where your depth comes into play. And that's maybe the only place where the Celtics don't have the kind of quality depth that I think benefits them as a group. Like, you look around and say, well, what could they use? I mean, they got all this talent, all this size, all this length, all this youth, all this everything. What could they use more of? Well, maybe if you had one more big in reserve who you knew you could count on for quality minutes, that would be an ideal player to have if there's something going on with Al Horford. But I don't worry about Al's approach or Al's, tenacity about coming back from an injury like that and making sure he's at his best when they need him. But, you know, the Father Time is chilling. Like, I mean, he's got the belt around his waist still. The only person to evade him so far that I can think of really is LeBron. Everybody else has had to deal with that at some point. And Al has known nothing but the postseason in his NBA career. You know, yeah. You go back to his rookie year in Atlanta, he's always been in the playoffs for the most part, except for the times where he had the
chest issues or something.
He's always been available for his team and been a productive guy. I was making fun of some people here in Atlanta earlier in the year watching the Celtics game, and I said it, like, I've never understood why people here didn't appreciate Al as much as they should have, and I would suspect that he's going to be a guy that's going to be ready to go when they need him later in the year and certainly in the playoffs.
Speaking of Atlanta, and the Hawks are coming in here tomorrow night, I'm just curious, what's the vibe down there with Trae Young and with the season that Luke is having? Are fans upset that they made that deal? Like, what's the general tenor around the Hawks right now?
There's a wait and see thing for a lot of people, Chris, to be honest with you. They, you know, the people who didn't like the idea of Trae Young over Luka Doncic, they've been upset since draft night and have never wavered. I mean, they've seen nothing that should change their mind, and I agree. I mean, Luka's a future superstar. And I think the biggest miscalculation the Hawks might have made in their evaluations of those guys is they didn't value Luka's high-level production on the global stage the way I would have if I was making that decision. And they didn't – I don't think they believed Luka would be the kind of box office attraction Trae Young would be because of his college career leading the NCAA in scoring and assists and assuming that would translate. This city would have been more than eager to welcome an international star like Luka Doncic. You look at the soccer championship that was just won here with a crazy parade Monday. I mean, Sherrod, I'm glad I can finally say I live in a city where somebody in that town is a champion.
Welcome to the club, my friend. Welcome to the club.
You know what I mean? Yeah, it's like – I had no idea how good it felt, even if I've never been to a game, haven't been to one in my life. I'm walking around town with my chest poked out, too, like we're champions. But the question you ask is an interesting one, Chris, because I think there's going to be a legion of fans, and I use that word loosely when we talk about Hawks fandom, but I think there's going to be a part of them that will never be cool with the choice of Trae Young over Luka Doncic, unless Trae Young becomes Steph. And we all know after watching him so far, you know, it's not that he doesn't have game or that he's not talented, but Steph is a whole other mutant than what Trae Young is. And that's not by happenstance that Steph has become the player he has. And I don't know that Trae Young has that kind of profile. The player comps to me do you no service as young players coming into this league because, you know, how are we supposed to gauge whether or not somebody is the next two-time MVP, three-time champion? You know what I mean? I just think it's a completely unfair, way of evaluating players as they come into the league. And that evaluation is never going to go away for Trae Young because it's been talked about so much.
Sekou Smith giving a shout-out to the MLS champion Atlanta squad down there. Now, Sekou, before I let you go, I've seen some pictures of the MLS Cup out there, out and about in Atlanta, you know, in some clubs, per se. Now, you didn't take that, right? That wasn't your picture, right?
I was out of town, actually. So I have an alibi. I do have an alibi. But had I been in the city limits, I would have gladly joined the trophy.
Just to partake in the celebratory nature
exactly.
of things. Yes.
Hey, it's all about the game, man. You got to be there to support the game. That strictly would have been about.
Exactly. Sekou Smith, thank you so much, my man. Shout out to Sekou for joining the Celtics Talk podcast. That's the one guy, Chris, that can own A. Sherrod, can son A. Sherrod Blakely. So anytime we can get my man Sekou, the OG, on the podcast.
So if we need to police Sherrod, we'll just call
exactly.
him.
That's because,
exactly.
That's because he – see, here's the thing about Sekou. Sekou knows where all – or not – he knows where most of the skeletons. So, yes, he gets to son me.
Exactly.
Yes, he does. That's my dude.
Exactly. All
he
right,
cannot
guys.
Do anything wrong.
The Celtics with a big week of games coming up. I guess the next time we'll have this will be right before that Milwaukee game. And so the streak keep going, Chris?
I think it does. Back-to-backs are always tough, especially when you consider how depleted they might be. Maybe they get a few guys back here from illness. But again, I just keep going back to it. If you're going to lean on your depth, you've got to win these games. There's no reason you shouldn't beat teams like Atlanta. They've already handled Detroit twice. They should be able to keep this thing going, keep building good habits. Like, listen, they got a ton of momentum. They're just you just feel like as long as they come with the energy. And that was the one thing. That first half against in D.C., I'm thinking,
real
man,
flat.
They just don't have it.
Yeah.
Like they were overdue for a night like that. But then Marcus gives them that spark, and Kyrie goes to another level, and you're able to find a way to win that game. So that's a really good sign, because if you can have nights where you don't have it, and you're battered and you're bruised, and you still find a way to win, That's really encouraging sign that they can kind of own the lesser competition, especially when you figure that they were 5-5 against teams under 500 to start the year. You got to start winning those games.
Yeah, I'm a little worried about the Detroit game. That's the one that I look at as like, I'm not sure about that one. It's on back to back. Two, Detroit, they've struggled, so you got to figure they're due to have one of those really special nights that speaks to how. Frankly, they can have one of those nights every blue moon. But overall, though, I think the Celtics will continue to play good basketball, continue to inch closer and closer to Toronto for that top spot in the East. And, yeah, I mean, that Milwaukee game, as much as we like to, you know, kind of play that one game at a time, it's hard not to look at that game and think, like, damn, that's like the real. That's when it gets real. So they're going to be all right.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Celtics Talk Podcast. Shout out to Sekou Smith once again for jumping on. Make sure you download the My Teams app. You can find the podcast on there. Some of the great stories by Forsberg and Sherrod Blakely. Plus, if you want to stream all the Celtics games on NBC Sports Boston and NBCSportsBoston.com, just download the My Teams app. And make sure you go subscribe to the Celtics Talk Podcast on all your favorite podcasting apps. For Sherrod Blakely and Chris Forsberg, I'm Kyle Draper. See you next time.
We out!